Good day, fellow explorers. This is what we have for you on today's Impact Everywhere podcast.
People constantly now, we're thinking about, you know, changes, the transformations that the world needs. And we're thinking of new systems rather than for a moment really listening and saying, what are the old systems? And so when we bring in new music into a space, we impose our new ideas and say, this is what we see. This is the new order. This is, hey, everybody has to, this is the drum beat right here. Everybody, come on. Rather than listening to the space and saying, I feel that this drum beat could actually take this music in the right direction.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Impact Everywhere, the podcast that looks for people having a positive impact in unexpected places. Our guest today is Jurgis Did, and he is a phenomenal Lithuanian artist currently living in Colombia. I have to say that I never expected someone to break out in song in the middle of a podcast, but this is exactly what happened here with Jurgis, and it is a phenomenal experience. I think very often in these episodes that I've done so far, they tend to be fairly cerebral, but Jurgis brought a completely different dimension into the conversation by oscillating between a combination of song and what was meant to be a participatory musical experience that took place on Clubhouse. Jurgis is more than a musician. He studied political science as well as business administration and has extensive experience in campaigning, corporate education, media consulting, and many more social things. Not only that, he used to host TV shows on MTV, sat on the board of NGOs like Save the Children, Lithuania, and has entertained thousands of people from corporate boardrooms to government institutions, and actually has done like over 5 different TEDx talks, all of which are really interesting and exciting and filled with not only knowledge, but entertainment. With that being said, I'm really excited to introduce our guest today. This is Jurgis, and here he is talking about how he got into music and when he realized that music was a powerful tool for transformation.
When I was a child, from as far back as I can remember, I saw that music is a very disruptive medium. I think it was maybe seeing Guns N' Roses on MTV, singing Paradise City. I remember it clearly because we were in a restaurant with my parents. What was coming out of the TV felt so alive and so dynamic and so exciting. But that was one of the moments when I said, there is a cultural difference that is coming from that to what I'm experiencing now. And then I remember I got my first Walkman, and it was for me the ability to put myself, to immerse myself in somebody else's acoustic reality and just close my eyes and feel that, yes, I understand what they're saying. Yes, I resonate with this. Yes, it is resonating with me. And more deeply, that it is forming my character as well as I'm listening to it. And I think that always stuck with me, because another of those feelings that has been with me for as long as I can remember is pain of the earth. Like in Colombia, you see a lot of nature, but you see a lot of mistreated nature as well. You see a lot of people polluting. And more than pollution, it's just when somebody cuts a tree and builds something stupid instead. I remember as a child going, this is senseless, this is painful. And so I think what I've become is just a combination of those two kind of vectors, which I've had since my early childhood. One is understanding the transformative power of music, and the other one is a need to do something. And I've kind of refined it and said that if we came to Earth to reproduce, to eat, and leave our mark on Earth in that form, well, then it's not a life worth living. I really do believe that there is a collective consciousness, and to do well for others is to do well for oneself. So that kind of plays in nicely with music, and then the rest is just a really long journey.
I'd love to expand a little bit. So you go from realizing that music has a power to connect on a deeper level as a child, but then you actually need to acquire those skills and apply them and see it for yourself and realize that it is something that you can do, that you can contribute into the world. What was that piece of the puzzle? Because I think many of us that exist in this world, while our skills may be different, like I myself am a terrible musician, but it took me a very long time to figure out how I could use my skills and apply it into the world. And so what was that journey like for you, and what lessons did you learn along the way?
Let me expose myself and be a little bit vulnerable. I'm not actually a musician. So I always put that out there, because I believe that a true musician is a person who delves into the mathematics of music. Like, for example, I can't even read notes properly. It'll take me a while. If you put some notes in front of me, I'm going to struggle. And so for me, it was always looking at music as a tool, but really being hesitant when it came to, this is what you have to learn. You have to go to conservatory. You have to go to jazz school or something like that. I was like, no, that's not what music is for me. And I think as a child, the bands which I found influential were so counterculture that music school didn't seem like a good idea. Now, in hindsight, I believe that was a bad idea because, you know, just learning more words, learning to refine your vocabulary, learning the mathematics of music is something that I think everybody could benefit highly from. But I think that the problem is, and the main problem is, when people don't do music because they see that other people can do it better than them. And that's the kind of rift we have in society, where we have performers and we have the entertained. We have entertainers and we have the entertained. And one of the examples I give is, I might not be an excellent conversationalist, but that doesn't mean I shouldn't engage in the act of conversation. Or only the porno actors should be having sex because they get paid for it and they do it very well. And then that leaves the rest of us to think, what is our purpose and what is our relationship with the art form? And so I think that music has been stolen from us. I think music as a language, music as personal therapy, music as a way of creating collective space has been robbed from us. And that's something that I realized maybe when I was 16, 17, when I understood that there is music that lives outside our recordings. We've been making recordings for 140 some years, but previous to that, for the hundreds of thousands of years that humanity has been around, music has been a part of our lives. And so the question is, what was music like before that? And what I realized is that music is everywhere. And especially when you start reading Sufi texts or musicians, or for example, even John Coltrane, or you look into musicians who look at music with a capital M. And musicians who understand music from the capital M perspective is that music never starts, it never stops. It always is. It's always happening. I often tell people, just listen. Your air conditioner is making music. Your heaters are making music. The birds are making music. Earth has a frequency which is musical. That's emitting sound all the time. We may not perceive it. And so at some point, you realize that what we're taking is photographs when we record songs. We're taking a series of photographs when we release an album. And so to turn it into an art form is great. It's beautiful. I have nothing against the record, and have maybe a little bit something against the record industry, because I think they're commodifying something which belongs to everybody. I think that looking at music more as an expanded thing adds a lot of perspective. And then beyond adding perspective, you start thinking about the possibilities. Just the idea that if you put music at a certain BPM with plenty of low frequencies, it will alter your heartbeat. And when you start singing with human beings, that there's all kinds of also psychosomatic changes that take place, your biochemistry changes. These things are substantial. And because the record industry just looks at the music that we can sell, we forget that this is something that belongs to us. And because people are more interested in marketing what they can sell rather than what you can achieve or have or possess for free, little by little, we've forgotten this faculty, this gift, this magical power we have of being musical and musicality.
Wow, that's really interesting. Music has been stolen from us. But I do think that so much of what you described about how the world revolves around what can be sold affects basically every single aspect of our culture these days. And so what are you doing to fight against that? Or how are you fighting against that?
That's the curious thing, man. I don't think you can fight it. I don't think you can fight it. I think fighting it is the wrong way of going about. Let me add another piece of the puzzle. Let me put another dot on the board. I did an MBA maybe 7 years ago, I can't remember, in a master's in business administration, because I'd just done Eurovision then with my band. I'd been with them for 7 years and we'd had this lovely trajectory. We'd made beautiful music, but I felt that we'd reached the end of the road. I said, this is it. I can't make money off of this. I'm tired. I'm tired of making music I don't want to make. I'm tired of making music that doesn't affect change. And so I had this kind of moment of reckoning, and I said, I have to go back to school. I need to do something. Previously, I had finished political science. And so I said, what should I study? I thought philosophy, maybe something else. And my parents, my family, my whole family, which are a family of business people, were quite adamant. They said, Jurgis, you should do a master's in business administration. And I said, okay, fine, let's try it. And actually, it's one of the best decisions I took in my life, because I got to understand the dynamics of the monster, of this humongous pantomime that we play when it comes to distributing wealth in the world. I saw it, I understood it. And for example, a gun, a truck, any tool we've created, they're not inherently bad. We just use them inappropriately. I will agree that there's tools that we create for nefarious purposes, but in essence, the problem is how we are playing market economy. And one of the main problems there, which I find, is education. For example, the realization, if you're on social media, then your attention is the main commodity being peddled there, and people don't want to see it. Or that when somebody's selling you something, or when you see an ad on TV, they're not doing it for your best interest. And I think that just the ability to see through bullshit, to see through bullshit through education, to help people see, I think that's the first step. Because I really don't believe in creating changes where people aren't aware of the reason why they're taking place. I think the future is both regenerative and co-created. And that means that we have to assume responsibility. And if we're going to assume responsibility for our actions, obviously then we need to be well informed. So for me, that change comes through education. And that's what I do with music now. My idea is that if you can create a musical interaction which lays bare and exposed the reality, the social realities, how we create tribes, how we create social units, how we place values, beliefs in that vessel, and how that guides the operation of the vessel for as long as the musical experience lasts, then, my friend, you can remove the veil of many an eye. You can also effectively show people how to hack those social systems. So for me, music right now, and that's what I tell everybody, is like, it's a metaphor. Let's use music as a metaphor. Let's make music that's kind together. Let's make music that's resonant or harmonious together. Let's make music that's exciting. Let's make music that inspires. And that's the direction I've taken. And it, you know, the funny thing is that it's only really happened because there were so many disparate polymath elements in my life that had no way of coming together, that were even opposites. And all of a sudden, I see that, oh shit, I can't talk about capitalism if I hadn't studied business administration, or I could not connect emotionally with business people or leaders if I could not connect with them emotionally through music.
Let's make this a little bit more granular then. So I've heard one of your talks, and it's funny, in the social impact space, we constantly talk about theories of change. What is your theory of change when it comes to bringing change about in the world, to bring it closer to this regenerative and co-created world that you mentioned a little bit earlier? You seem to have something parallel, which is what you call the theory of games. Can you break that down for us a little bit?
I come up with theories every now and then because I really believe that you can, in effect, take anybody else's theory, apply it to your life. And I really love kind of that Buddhist angle where if it serves you, good. If it doesn't serve you, put it away. But I think that it's really cool when you find your own epistemology and you find your own linguistics to define what those things are and how they work for you. So I really like saying a theory of games, that everybody's playing a game. And games, recognizing that there's dynamics, people are looking for utility, people are looking for all kinds of things. In an irrational world with irrational beings, we're looking for emotional stimulus. And so I boil it down to saying, yeah, we're all out there looking for stimulus. And I'm not saying the theory is right or not. And even returning to certain tenets of kind of game theory, where you can apply zero-sum thinking or the prisoner's dilemma and all kinds of this kind of stuff. And you change the variables which are defining our interactions. It makes for good fun. For example, if I say attention is what drives the world, or love is what drives the world, or getting laid is what drives the world, you run that variable through that system and you start to get very interesting kind of results. You start to really pick up on the fact that we're not rational beings. We do play with one another constantly. This is all about dynamics, and that somewhere underneath, people are driven by different things. And so I just found that kind of informing, and more as a way of explaining the world, a way of playing with my interpretations of the reality around us.
And so what are some other theories that you've played around with that you've found really interesting, and maybe share a couple experiments that you've done and what you've learned along the way?
The thing that has currently got me is the idea that music is everywhere. We are all music, in effect, that if reality is vibrations, then music is just beautiful vibrations. And that's it. And so something that I will often do during meetings or clubhouse, listen in, but I'll be playing guitar in the background, and not necessarily for everybody to hear, but I'll pick up on the person's, like, their vibe, you know, what they're saying, what their rhythm is, how they're talking. And then I'll turn that into music. And sometimes I'll loop it and I'll start just messing with it. And the funny thing is that I'll realize is that the conversation will maintain more or less that kind of same musical flow. But this parallel is absolutely everywhere. And so one of the ideas that I really try to get people to think about is, if you start seeing the world as music and start understanding that terms such as harmony, rhythm, resonance are very beautiful to observe in a metaphor, in a meta sense. But then when you start picking up that, oh wait, holy shit, this is beyond meta. This is actually physical manifestation. And when you say, oh, those people are in resonance, but wait, when they speak, actually the note of their speaking is sympathetic. When you go out into the woods and you start playing techno music, the rustle of the animals changes to accommodate that. And so I've been in this very expansive journey lately of finding the music in absolutely everything, even in the fluctuations of, you know, the markets, of the seasons, of weather. Yesterday was the full moon. It's like, It sounds hippie esoteric, but at the end of the day, if we were to think of what we really need right now, it's not more new shit. What we need, in my opinion, is just to figure out how to make a little bit more harmony. What you can say to a human being to help them emanate a more positive ray of light. I'll give you a good example of how this works. People constantly now, we're thinking about, you know, changes, the transformations that the world needs. And we're thinking of new systems rather than for a moment really listening and saying, what are the old systems? And so when we bring in new music into a space, we impose our new ideas. And say, this is what we see. This is the new order. This is the drum beat right here. Everybody come on. Everybody. Rather than listening to the space and saying, I feel that this drum beat could actually take this music in the right direction. One of the people who has absolutely informed this musical perspective of mine is this Sufi philosopher called Hazrat Inayat Khan. I've never really heard the guy's music, but I know that he's my favorite musician just because of his writings, the way that, because of his relationship with music. He may sing as terrible as a howling dog, or he may be off rhythm or something, but the way that he understands music already reflects a deeper intelligence. One of my favorite quotes of his is he says, I used to play music, but now I don't play music anymore because I understood that I don't need to play it to bring harmony to human beings. Can you imagine that? I don't need to create sound to bring harmony to human beings. That for me is such an amazing idea that you can affect a person's reality with a compliment. You can tell a girl who you can tell her self-esteem is not doing so well at that moment, and you can give her the right compliment at the right time. And her music will change for the rest of the day. And in turn, that music will change for everybody she interacts with. And so for me, this idea that there are waves interacting with waves. And so first of all, hearing the harmony, hearing the rhythms, hearing the patterns, and then in a very deliberate way, altering them, being careful, I think is super important.
What a beautiful and interesting way to see the world, Jurgis. I think there's something really special here. And I'm feeling a little bit sad now because I think I understand what you mean intellectually, but I kind of wish that I could feel it. You know what I mean?
Sure, man. I mean, I think talk is cheap, right? But I honestly think that the music can sometimes convey a lot more information. And especially if people are allowed to partake in the music. And especially if people feel that by partaking in the music, they make the music a little bit better. And I mean better in the sense that they have a nicer relationship with it, in the sense that they actually feel that they can elevate it. And so this is, I'm going to play just a very quick experiment with you. I'm not going to do a song, but I have this very beautiful circle of fifths, major fifths. No, sorry. It's a major of seventh. It's a circle of major sevenths, which works in a therapeutic manner. But if you, everybody, just if you hum to yourself this very beautiful note, just take this root note. This would be an E. Just hum to yourselves. And when you hum it, feel the vibrations. Feel how the air caresses your vocal cords, how it flows through your body, you know, in every direction. You know, you take that. Oh. Now make the O sumptuous. Make it delicious. Oh. Make the O tinged with a little bit of sadness. Oh. You can take that simple note and just by charging it with your emotion, you can change the interpretation of what that note is, right? All right, just hold that note, hold a note, find one that is comfortable for you and reflects where you are now, okay? Oh, oh, point I'm really inclined in making is that I can make a simulation through music of you, of a human being, being in line with their own frequency and staying harmonious in changing circumstances. So even if you held that same note and I go, you, hold on. You. And what that will do to you is that it will give you a sense of kind of calmness. As long as I'm holding harmonious chords, the person will feel cradled in the reality of those interwoven notes.
It's super interesting. Being able to sing along and be transported in one direction or another is, I think, a really great metaphor to the way conversations flow and ideas flow in the world. And so I'm getting a little bit closer to understanding what you mean. When it comes to actually the work itself, when you work with people and you do these edutainment experiences and you try to bring social ideas into a space, how do these two actually play in? Like, what does a Jurgis experience look like, and how does it unfold, and how do you know when you're successful?
How do I know when I'm successful? All right, so what's the progression? The progression is quite simple. Say I'm on a stage, and say I'm singing, and that's fine. I'm holding attention. I'm holding people's attention, and that's great. At some point, about 5 years ago, I realized that I can sing, and I can play music, and people will find it entertaining, but they'll... You know, playing music in the background also, it can make you sound very, very smart, you know? How many videos of people saying ordinary crap aren't littering the internet? And they just sound a little bit smarter because there's some, like, smart music in the background. And so it was a way of also putting people in a state of kind of, like, subtle hypnosis. So by playing music in the background and saying something on top, it's actually a form of what some friend told me is Ericksonian hypnosis, where you introduce an element of, which is so completely random, which is so out of the box, that kind of like people go, it's like, oh wow, what's that? You know, they kind of come under your spell. And that worked for a while. And then I realized that people really like it when you let them sing and dance, when you let them clap, when you let them participate. So what I'll usually do when I open a space, because now my whole thing is about creating these spaces, interactive musical spaces, where we simulate a community, where we simulate a tribe. And so first thing I'll say is like, okay, ladies and gentlemen, please enter the space. You are allowed to feel comfortable in this space. This space is what we will make of it. This space is here to serve us, and the way that it serves you is by you serving the space. So I will ask people, what would you like to bring into the space? Would you like some joy? And you know, people will go, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Would you like excitement? And people say, yeah, we want excitement. And someone says, what else would you like? And some person might say love, some person might say empathy, kindness, or whatever. And so by letting a person just express that and bring it into the space, people are reprogramming themselves. Like in this very complex, very accelerated neural network where it's like everybody all of a sudden is serving those principles. You know, if at some point you say, can we make it soft? Can we make it sad? And so the beautiful thing about that whole thing is that people really understand that they're in a very, very intimate relationship with the people in the space, where they're both beaming their values into the space, but by expressing those values, by expressing things with joy, love, and kindness, they become loving, joyous, and kind. So for example, if we were to bring people up on stage and you go, can I get some joy? And somebody expresses a joyous noise, you know that everybody who hears that joyous noise on this call will start smiling. And so that idea that we can affect each other's realities through sending these small messages, that's the beauty. And the whole idea of harmony plays in really beautifully with that. Because at some point, you know, we all say, hey, if we're all serving the same purpose, if we are all seeking to create a harmonious, beautiful experience filled with the things that we mentioned at the very beginning, you will see everybody serving that purpose. Without any written agreement, without anybody saying, hey, these are the rules, this is the protocol. It's just like we're hardwired to do it. That when we human beings manage to be focused and very much within the comfort and the security and the conviction of our values, we can do amazing things together.
Thank you so much for sharing all of this, Jurgis. I want to ask you a question about how at some point you've mentioned in a talk that what art does is it creates these dots for the public to connect, right? We're almost like paving the way for certain conversations to take place or certain ideas to spread. And I'm wondering, How do you do that strategically within the greater ecosystem of all this social change when we talk about regenerative systems and which are very complex issues that extend far beyond a single experience, but almost an entire new way of being? How does your work actually help hold people's hands to create those dots?
Well, Benjamin, it's funny that you should mention it and you should ask me, because as of last week, actually yesterday, Sunday of last week, I am now an official regenerative recreacionista. And now a recreacionista is a person that holds attention. He's a person that entertains. In Colombia, it used to be that recreacionista was a person we would invite that would be invited to parties and to bar mitzvahs and weddings to entertain the kids. Basically, it was like the jester, the clown for the children. And my parents would, you know, they would threaten me, like by saying, "Hey, if you become a musician, the best thing you can expect to become is a recreacionista." And it scared the living daylights out of me until I understood that actually what I do is I focus attention, intention for the greater good. You know, you bring people together and you say, "Hey, well, let's make music together and let's make it fun." And all of a sudden, people who'd never spoken to themselves before or who had been in a professional relationship for 20 years but never really smiled at each other are having fun together. And so what that does is that opens so many possibilities. That's just like, it's kind of like an invitation to flirt with possibilities of the future or with diverging scenarios. And so what I really like about this whole thing, especially when we talk about regeneration versus sustainability versus ecology versus, you know, I don't know, all the other movements which are scientifically grounded in helping the earth, is that regeneration very much looks at the power of human creativity and our ability to envision kind of different outcomes, in our ability to imagine without inhibition, and to do it together. You know, if you think about it, science can describe a lot of things. But when it comes to prescription, I think you need the touch of an artist, a person who says, "Wouldn't that be beautiful? Wouldn't that be lovely? What if people were like this? What if people were like that?" And so the mission, the real mission of the artist, is to sow a seed of what if in the minds of people, to say, "Hey, that's beautiful. That's something worth working for. That's something somewhere, someplace, sometime I would like to envision myself in." And so I've become really, 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 really happy more than happy. I feel that regeneration has kind of cured my cynicism, because I saw that sustainability was not going to be enough. Sustainability basically is just, you know, finding ways of doing more of the same. And regeneration is really just a license to dream. And because it's grounded in science and the design thinking of Buckminster Fuller, it's not like some kind of new crazy hippie esoteric idea. It's actually very, very, very both accepted in the vernacular, you know, of what you know humanity considers to be not woo-woo, but also there's a lot of research, a lot of science, and a lot of people behind it. So I'm super thrilled to be really both in spaces with these regenerative people, but also helping them be inspired and them inspiring me too.
One quick question on that before handing the mic over to Frank over here, who raised his hand. So you sow seeds into people's minds of what possibilities, what could be. How do you stay motivated if so much of the impact that you have on the world is potentially transient?
Yeah, we are transient, Benjamin. If the idea of being transient is a reason to not do something, we're absolutely screwed. A smile is transient, a beautiful moment. Everything is fleeting. But in this case, I have an MBA, right? And so I offer a service to organizations and companies. I say, "Hey, we're going to come, we're going to make music together." I'm basically a Trojan horse, because people say, "Oh, we're going to make some music together. This guy's going to come." And I love these challenging situations where people are like, "Who is this guy? Who is this public speaker with the guitar? Who's that dude? Whatever." And then at the end of the experience, everybody goes like, "What was that? What just happened?" It's like people say, "I haven't sung in 20 years. I've been terrified of music since my piano teacher said that I'm as talented as dirt." When I see people exit the circle crying because they've been through a lot and they just needed to feel the warmth of human connection. And so I'm not cheap, man. I saw these sessions for quite a decent amount of money. It's strange because outside of the music business, people don't get what I do. They're like, well, but you're not releasing albums. You don't have singles on the radio. And I said, because I'm glad, because I can make the music I want to make and not the music which is going to fly through this industrial machine. And the weird thing is that afterwards, especially in Lithuania, which is a small territory, people started to come up, like musicians, they say, but you look like you're happy and independent. And I said, yes, because I figured ways of adding value and serving people with my music outside of the traditional schemes. And so I'll give you a good example. The best compliment I get is just people crying. Like, I see them and nothing more has to be said. You see a person go like, I needed that. But the other one which really does a lot for me is when a person, say the president, the CEO, the head of an organization says, you know what, Jurgis, 3 years ago when you did that thing, it really helped us. And to this day, when we talk about trust, we remember how we felt during that exercise. Or when they go, when you spoke about what teamwork feels like, we still remember that. Or somebody says, now when we say I love you in our organization, people don't think it's sexual harassment, but they say it as a joke. And for me, those are absolutely tectonic shifts in an organization. Can they put them in the balance sheet? No. Will they be able to attribute their increase in sales to me directly? No. But that it's valuable, I have absolutely no doubt.
Love it. This actually resonates a ton. And I love that you're focused on adding value. If the entire reason for your existence is adding value, then obviously you are going to be doing that, whichever medium you happen to be proficient at. And what you were just saying there about these CEOs reaching out to you and connecting with you reminds me of an interview I had with Adam Roa in episode 40, where he says that art is the most effective technology for getting people to feel something. There's no other way to do that effectively other than through the art. So that truly resonates. How do you bring this sense of play and connection and harmony into your everyday life when the microphone isn't turned on, when the rest of the world isn't looking? What does that look like?
I think the essential thing right there is to listen, really, really to listen. And the other thing is really to understand that sometimes the medicine we need are the people around us. I've realized that technology is such a black mirror, you know, that if you project love into the black mirror, if you project love onto people, usually that's what you're going to get back. You know, we are actually giving the platform, or we get through the platform, we're giving each other the thing that we need most. I think the mystics say, what you are searching is searching you, in a sense. And I think that is very right. And I think that's why you enter spaces like this and you go, oh, what a great group of people. Wow, this is exactly what I needed to hear today. And so self-prescribing is very difficult. Self-prescribing can be like, it's almost like a form of I wanted to say self-indulgence, right? Because you're serving yourself again. And I think that, at least for me, I sometimes heal myself and cure myself by serving others. You know, doing something nice for somebody else puts everything into perspective. And so I think a really beautiful way of closing this space is by doing the following. I'm going to put that riff back on. And with muted microphones, I would like you to sing the following thing to yourself. You're going to sing. Ba 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 da ba da ba. Ba 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 da ba da ba. Sing it to yourself a couple of times. Sing it like it's joyous. Sing it like you were singing to a child. Singing it like you're singing it to someone's ear. And if you've got that wa-pa-pa-ra-pa-ra-pa, and you make it represent something positive for you, a nice moment we're having together, I would like to invite you to bring that wa-pa-pa-ra-pa into the space. We'd like to hear your interpretation of wa-pa-pa-ra-pa-ra-pa. Yeah. Wa-pa-ra-pa-ra-pa.
So folks, for those of you who are still listening at this point, this musical interlude continues on for a little while, where basically everyone unmiked themselves and started singing along and chanting and adapting their voices. I didn't want to put it in here because it got a little bit chaotic, latency issues, and the strong beats actually ended up being quite a little bit confusing. But that being said, the morale of the story and the way we ended up concluding this room focused around how this song could be a little mantra that you would bring around with you so that you could remember a moment in time on how you felt, how music made you feel, and that you could bring that into your everyday life as a sort of a reminder or a mantra, if you will. Anyways, if you enjoyed this episode, I would highly invite you to go check out Jurgis's website. There'll be a link at impacteverywhere.club. And as always, you can go and find show notes, graphics, audiograms, and all that lovely stuff. If you're enjoying this podcast so far, make sure to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and leave a written review. It makes a really big difference to a young podcast like mine. And I just always love reading the comments. So thank you very much. And with that being said, folks, I hope you stay positive and you stay inspired, because impact is everywhere.